From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. No matter where you work, on the factory floor, in a bank, a corporate office, or a software startup, how you dress for that day in the office is some kind of a decision. Do I conform? Do I want to stand out? To loosen up? To dress up? Time was, uniforms, or at least pretty clear standards, even formal codes, were the norm. Not today. We're in a more casual age, a lot fewer rules. But with that, a lot more uncertainty. This hour on Point, what to wear to work. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Is there a norm in your workplace now? What is it? Is it clear and easy to decide what to wear to work? Is it complicated now, a minefield? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me today from New York is Vanessa Friedman, fashion director at the New York Times. Her recent piece is headlined The End of the Office Dress Code. You can link to that at our website, onpointradio.org. Vanessa Friedman, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Also with us from Los Angeles is Christina Binkley. She is fashion and style columnist for The Wall Street Journal, author of Winner Takes All, also been writing about office dress. Her piece that we have at our website is called The Case for Uniform Dressing. Christina Binkley, welcome to On Point. Thanks so much for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Vanessa, there was kind of a code, whether it was formal or not. Men, you know, we know what they looked like from the man in the gray flannel suit and many years after that. It's gone away. We've got Zuckerberg in his T-shirt and hoodie. We've got all kinds of freedom out there. Is it making people happy? Is it making people unclear what to do?
Well, I think in theory, it's a good thing, right? In theory, yeah. This is all about the rights of the individual, the empowerment of the individual, the ability to decide who you are and telegraph that to everyone around you. In practice, it's not nearly that simple. You know, I think we are all conditioned to want to be part of a group, to want to fit in, to want to fulfill our part of the social contract, and how you dress is a part of that.
Christina, in Los Angeles, we understand the freedom and the pleasure that comes in that of not having to, I mean, for guys, in many workplaces now, forget the tie. There's such an interesting conversation about ties. We'll look at that. Mm-hmm. In many workplaces, forget the suit. Women in many workplaces forget the heels. There are exceptions to this all over the place, I'm sure. But what about the challenges that come with a kind of open field, do whatever you like circumstance, Christina?
Yeah, it's terrifying. You know, I mean, schools for years, many schools have gone with uniforms exactly because they want to reduce the stress of kids competing with each other over what they're wearing and making those choices. I think what we end up with, though, is people, you know, competing extremely, spending much more money than they used to, trying to sort of keep up with fashions, figure out what's right for their office. It's much easier to have something that you can rely on day in and day out, have a separate wardrobe for the office and another one for the rest of your life.
Vanessa, when there was more conformity, even enforced conformity with formal dress codes, just bring that back to us, because for some young workers, they may have no memory of that. What did it look like?
You know, for men, it looked absolutely like a suit and a tie and a button-down shirt, often within a very narrow range of colors. You know, it was a white shirt, it was a blue shirt, it was a solid tie. Maybe it had a little tiny pattern, it didn't have a big pattern. You know, UBS, the Swiss bank, had a 44-page dress code as recently as 2010, which specified shoulder width, length of jacket.
That blew my mind.
Down to the underwear that people wore and what color it should be.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
It was limiting.
And for women, if it was suits and ties, for a lot of men in office circumstances, I mean, women always had more leeway, didn't they? Or am I wrong?
You know, if you look at the 80s, clearly women's leeway was a feminized version of menswear, right? It was, you know, it was the
big-shouldered
power suit.
And, you know.
Exactly, you know, and it was the pump. You know, that has changed dramatically. But, you know, certainly in the beginning, the idea was that if you wanted to break into a man's world, you looked kind of like a guy.
So, I mean, what works these days, Christina? I go to events where they're in the guy side of this equation, it's hilarious because people don't know whether to wear a tie or not. And so it's all over the place. I mean, who cares in one sense? On the other hand, there's that urge to conformity that we always hear about. And then you've
you put your Sorry, go ahead.
No, please, you. Finger on.
You put your finger on something there when you see that urge to conformity, because we've broken out of it. I don't know about you. I know an awful lot of men who take a tie in the car or in their briefcase with them because they're
these
not
days.
Sure. And this
right.
can even be with a jacket, right? They have no idea, so they do both. But the nagging fear, and there's a reason behind it, there's good logic behind it, is that in truth we haven't entirely let go of all of those expectations. That's certainly true for people who are older than 35. So when you go into these situations and you are off in some way, people make note of it, even subliminally.
But Vanessa, there's still that urge to get it right somehow if you're thinking in career terms. I mean, in California, in the whole Silicon Valley scene, you know, mm-hmm. Zuckerberg has made a kind of statement. And so, which says, I'm so smart and powerful and keen that I can wear this T-shirt and hoodie and it shows a kind of freedom of mind or something.
Well, he's also made X billions of dollars, right? So that reinforces that one.
Yes. But I mean, if you would be the next Zuckerberg, you may want to, uh-huh. or maybe not. But I guess my point is, people are still looking to signal something with the way they dress, even if it has nothing to do with old-fashioned dressing up.
Right. Well, clothes have always been a means of communication, right? That's effectively what they are. They are subliminal signs about. That you are sending to people around you about who you are, what tribe you belong to, what your values are, where you work. And that hasn't changed, and that will never change. So the question for the individual and why this has become so complicated is that in the absence of an institutionalized dress code that tells you what to wear, you have to figure out what those signals are and how they're going to be read by yourself. And that is very confusing sometimes.
You went down to the museum at the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York, and they've got mm-hmm. this exhibit, Uniformity, mm-hmm. showing uniforms from over time. And, of course, I mean, uniforms themselves, there was a time when many trades had uniforms, and now many fewer mm-hmm. seem to have uniforms. But mm-hmm. but the way people without formal uniforms dress still constituted a uniform. Do you still look at different businesses or industries and see, in effect, uniforms there, Vanessa, even when everyone's free to choose?
You do, although it has gotten much fuzzier than it was even 10 years ago. You know, I think in most, you know, law firms, banks, particularly financial services institutions, you know, people, men in particular, will still wear a suit and tie. The tie might be in the drawer, as Christina points out, but, mm-hmm. you know, the jacket might be on the back of the chair, mm-hmm. but it is there. And if they're going to have a client meeting, on it goes. If you go to Silicon Valley, you do get a lot of hoodies and Tevas. You know, if you go to a school, you'll get a lot of khakis and button-down shirts.
Christina, what's the range of workwear that you now see when you move between different realms?
You know, living in Hollywood, I see often a world where the workwear and the power structure has actually been inverted in a lot of Hollywood offices. If you go into a meeting and see a group of people sitting around a table, the person that is worst dressed may be the most powerful person. That's probably the guy running the studio or the
yeah.
agency.
Yeah.
The guys in the suits and ties are signaling in Hollywood that they work for somebody
mm-hmm.
And therefore need to dress that way. So there are little pockets of work structures that take the idea of work dressing, as Vanessa says, signaling power and invert it. It can be discombobulating for people who come to Los Angeles and aren't familiar with that structure. They don't know how to treat people because they're dressed all wrong. You've got Steven Spielberg with a baseball hat on pulled backwards.
Vanessa, we know these stories. A private equity guy in Chicago bragging about how he wears a flannel shirt today every work uh-huh. and his work boots, but his underlings, they better look right. But the mm. boss man is dressed like he's headed yeah. off to be Paul Bunyan.
I mean, one of the most interesting places actually to look at in terms of dress codes and evolving dress codes, I think, is Washington. You know, because you have a first family in the White House that has really done a huge amount to loosen things up. You know, you are constantly seeing President Obama with his shirt sleeves rolled up without a tie.
Yeah.
You know, Michelle Obama has really transformed how first ladies look. You know, she is often in a dress with a cardigan, you know, in shorts sometimes. You know, she dresses like they both dress a lot like the rest of the population. And Washington has traditionally been one of the places, you know, that has stuck most closely to the way things were.
And yet, as you write recently, you've got Donald Trump out there bringing back the kind of 1980s power suit tie all the time.
You talk about messaging. You know.
What is the message there?
It's morning
guru?
In America, you know.
Oh, okay.
We're back to the 80s.
Back to the 80s. I mean, Christina, do you hear from people who just tear their hair out and say, I don't know what to wear now?
Yeah, you know, that's one of my joys is reading email every week that I get from readers, and that's a constant one. I'd say the two primary sort of threads of email that I get are people who can't find clothes that fit and can't figure out what to wear to work. And that, by the way, goes for men as well as women, which surprises me because as a woman, I have generally looked at what men wear and thought, oh, that looks so much more simple than what I have to deal with. But in truth, men are dealing with exactly these same issues.
Do people still tend to look for one look, or are they hopping all over the place out of their closet, Christina?
You know, I think some of if you have an unlimited budget and a real savvy sense of style, then hopping all over the place can be the right decision. Most of us have neither of those, and settling on a uniform look, I use that word not as, you know, the UPS man uniform, but a look that is relatively similar every day with similar fits so that when you stand in the closet and decide what to wear, you aren't reinventing the wheel day after day. That is an excellent, money-wise and time-wise, way to go.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what to wear now at work. The old conventions are long gone in many places. For many people, what's left is freedom, yes, and very often some confusion. Vanessa Friedman is with us, fashion director at the New York Times. Christina Binkley is with us from Los Angeles and the Wall Street Journal, fashion and style columnist there. Rex Hupke joins us in just a moment from the Chicago Tribune. You can join us as well. What's your go-to look for work now, and how did you come up with it? Are you channeling Mark Zuckerberg or Steve Jobs or Michelle Obama, Amal Clooney, Melissa McCarthy? What's your model? How do you do it? A couple of calls here, Vanessa, Christina. Nate in St. Louis. Thank you for calling, Nate. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, what's your story?
So I wanted to make an observation. First, thank you for a really important conversation. I have an interesting background. I am a pastor who formerly practiced law. And currently I work for a denominational office, and I supervise about 35 staff people.
Okay.
For a long time, in reaction of my years practicing law, I sort of pushed back and really advocated a very casual look. Even when I started churches as a senior pastor, I would dress in jeans all the time, casual button-ups. Recently, and I stepped into my current role about 3 years ago, in the last year I've kind of gone the other way. I've begun to dress a lot more kind of traditionally professional, if you will, a coat and tie sometimes, khakis, things like that.
Do you expect all of your staff to follow you, Nate?
No, actually the opposite. I really wanted my staff to dress as they felt they needed to dress to best serve their roles, but the anxiety in my office really raised whenever I began to dress differently, and there was a great fear that I would do exactly that, even though I said many times that my intent was really for my own benefit and not anybody else's. And so I'd love to hear the folks being interviewed talk a little bit about power dynamics and dress and how that affects an office or a community environment.
We'll try and pick it up, Christina. Nate has suddenly gone formal, and he's got his office all nervous in St. Louis. Does the boss signal what's going on, or are there tears like of a cake within an organization?
Well, there are, you know, I mean, that, you know, there's those axioms: dress for the job you want, not the job you have. Of course,
yes.
You're looking at the boss when you're doing that. We've been hearing these things for our whole lives, but absolutely, when the boss is signaling any kind of behavior, whether it's coming in at 7 a.m. and leaving it at 8 p.m. or wearing a suit when everybody else is going casual, this is sort of resetting or reestablishing the status quo, and it can scare people. you know, really, I mean, they may not even own the clothes or know how to assemble them if they did. So it's worthwhile for a boss thinking about what they're signaling and maybe addressing it head on and discussing it with people about why they're wearing what they're wearing and what their staff should wear for their varying roles.
Vanessa, what do you see these days in terms of communicating standards? I mean, a lot of people used to have codes, as you say, 40 pages at UBS, but these days people just say, wear what's appropriate. Of course,
appropriate,
this,
yeah.
What does that mean?
Appropriate and professional, the two most unspecific words in the workplace dictionary. You know, I think one of the biggest issues for people other than just what their boss is wearing and what signals they're sending is also, you know, how external facing their job is. You know, if you are someone who is constantly dealing with clients outside your own particular place of work, mm-hmm. if it's selling something to them or serving, you know, providing them with services, you generally want to wear something that is that will make them feel relaxed, will make them feel that they trust you. So, you know, one of the most interesting conversations I had was with a banker who said that, you know, when they're in Wall Street, they wear suit and tie. When they go to California, you know, as Christina said, if they're working with tech clients, they will, you know, wear a T-shirt, wear jeans, wear whatever they think that client will see as familiar. On the other hand, if they're trying to convince that client that they are the Wall Street firm that they should trust because, say, they were about to do an IPO, they will go back to the suit.
Yeah.
Because they're representing another form of their business. So, you know, you have to think about all these different factors when you're thinking about what to put on in the morning, which is why it is so incredibly confusing. I mean, it really is a sort of a science.
John says, when I worked in government, I wore a suit every day. Since 2001, I dressed like Mark Zuckerberg. I don't deal with clients, and most of the people I deal with are in other states or countries. When they're remote, wear what you like. Merlin says, my friend, a software engineer, is interviewing at Google today. He tells me the unspoken dress code at Silicon Valley is simply T-shirt, jeans, or khaki and sneakers. You'd look like a fool in a suit and tie or even business casual. And then Rachel writes to us. She says, and this is where you get into the extra scrutiny of women. She says, I find nothing more demeaning than being told as an adult that the clothes I've decided to wear are inappropriate. She writes, in my experience, every time the problem has come up, it's been petty, sexist, or idiotic. And here she's talking about, you know, she says skirts with pantyhose, regardless of the weather, or straps with a silk blouse. The straps sleeves have to be certain, or straps at least 2 inches wide. Do women have an extra level of scrutiny, Christina?
Yeah, they absolutely do. And I'm reminded that last writer of a situation happened a couple of years ago. I was writing about a law firm in Washington, D.C. that had found that its associates, particularly in the summer, were wearing clothes that they felt were completely inappropriate for client-facing meetings. And it was largely focused on women, and their concerns were extremely tight short skirts and very tight blouses. And they put out a memo, the senior partner put out a memo sort of defining what would be more appropriate and had to make a firm-wide apology because the memo was viewed as terribly sexist. And this is one of the things you can see on both sides of the coin. If you're trying to dress like a lawyer who looks on television, on one of the TV shows that we see, you may actually be overdoing the sex for a real courtroom, which was the concern of that law firm. On the other hand, when bosses tread on that territory, particularly male bosses, mm-hmm. telling female underlings what to wear, it's very hard to come off not being sexist.
We had this incident where somebody handed a weather woman on a California TV channel a sweater to put on over her skimpy dress during the show. People went nuts about that. In Kansas, the state legislator tried to put down requirements for those who were testifying. People didn't want to hear about that. Caroline, in New Orleans. Caroline, you're on the air.
Hi.
What's your story?
I'm calling because I find this subject so compelling. I work at a school, and I've found that there really doesn't seem to be a dress code for the staff. And I see teachers just wearing outfits that span the spectrum between tank tops and flip-flops all the way to, like someone mentioned earlier, khakis and button-downs. And so working there, I find it personally hard to know how to strike the right balance.
So how do you do it? How do you set your compass? How do you set your compass, Caroline?
I try to take my cue from my principal, but obviously, I think she dresses very professionally, and sometimes I feel like maybe I don't want to dress as nicely when other people aren't making the effort, and the allure of wearing jeans is strong.
Yeah, just to go for the comfort if there's no standard. On the other hand, where do you plant your flag there? I think everybody has felt some version of that one way or another, Caroline. I appreciate your call. Vanessa, Christina, stand by. I want to bring in Rex Hupke from Chicago, workplace columnist at the Chicago Tribune, nationally syndicated column out of there called I Just Work Here. Rex in Chicago, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. It's a great conversation.
Thank you. You hear Caroline in New Orleans, and, you know, she's got tank tops and flip-flops going on at her workplace, and then the principal of her school who's dressing more nicely, and she's trying to figure out, where do I want to be in this span? What does one do in that situation? Just wear what you like or make a stand? Does it matter?
Oh, it's tricky. And as you guys have been shining a light on, we're in a real strange transitionary phase here because you have a little bit of everything going on depending on where you work, and even regionally sometimes I think there's differences. My general feeling is err on the side of the person who's signing your paycheck. So what she said was kind of eyeing what the principal wears and following that. I don't think that's a bad idea.
But you could get the hairy eyeball from the rest of the teachers if you're the one who's, you know, dressing in heels and a nice dress like the principal, and they all want to go with tank tops.
Yeah, that's true. Although, like I said, at the end of the day, who would you rather have annoyed with you, your coworker or the boss? But I think that one of the things that – and I see this in all manner of workplace issues and interactions – is that people are afraid to actually ask. And I think that's one thing, especially now when we're so scrambled in so many places as to what is appropriate attire. I don't think there's anything wrong with actually saying what should I wear, especially if you're new.
Who do you ask, though?
I mean, principal, I think you go to go to a manager, go to your boss, and try to nail it down a little bit. I think and then maybe perhaps it's something that people will realize does need to be clarified. And again, it's this sort of, you know, companies, all regardless of how open we like to think companies have become and stuff, or how flat companies are becoming, there's still always a hierarchy in place, and people always feel pressured by that to some degree or another. So I think if you can start a dialogue of some sort about, okay, what are we doing here? I'm confused. I need to know what to wear or not to wear.
Yeah.
And that's not saying you want a dress code. That's just saying I want to kind of flesh this out a little bit. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
But Christine, if you go to the boss and say, what should I wear? Do you look savvy or do you look like a dork? And they're thinking, oh, you figure it out. And, you know, you show me what's good to wear. You make us stylish, fashionable, hip, cutting edge.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't ask it in quite those terms. What should I wear? So looking for an answer, but starting a discussion about it and saying, gee, I'm wondering, is this appropriate? What do you think is the right kind of dress for various situations? Mm-hmm. My guess is that a lot of bosses are asking the same questions of themselves and will probably appreciate a dialogue about that.
About expectations.
There's nobody, I don't think, alive today that isn't questioning what they're wearing to work. It's that broad of an issue.
Michael in Evansville, Indiana. Thank you for calling, Michael. You're on.
Hi. I would just like to relate a story where I'm a photographer, and about 20, 25 years ago, I was called to a company, a financial company, a very large one, and I went down visiting to discuss the project, and I had shorts and a T-shirt on, and I was informed you could not really go up to the second floor without having a suit and tie.
Okay.
It was where upper management was.
Right.
Well, recently I went down to shoot them again, and a lot of that original management was gone. But I'm shocked that the whole company now, well, most of it anyway, they're very, very casual. CEO many times may have jeans on and a polo shirt. And I even commented and mentioned with a little humor there that, and the irony is I've started dressing up I kind of wear a jacket and tie or maybe just a jacket and nice pants quite often.
So last time you couldn't even get in because you weren't dressed their way. Now they've gone to polo shirt and jeans and you're the dressy one.
That's exactly. And I can't explain why I'm dressing up, and my wife even asked me recently. She said, how come you're dressing up now? You know, all these years I would ask you to dress nicely for a, you know, for an affair, and you just sort of resisted, and all of a sudden you're wearing, you know, nice, maybe some skinny new jeans and really, you know, nice kind of a formal look. With a tie, or and I can't explain it, but I just thought it was ironic.
It is ironic. Vanessa Friedman in New York, there's a kind of power jujitsu that can go on here. One day it's the suit that means you're the powerful one. The next day, it's the fact that you're, you know, styling with your jeans and even a T-shirt, and it makes you look like the powerful one.
I mean, I think, you know, as not a bad rule for any kind of workplace dressing is actually that you don't want your clothes to distract from the substance of what you are, what you're doing or what you're trying to communicate.
Yep.
So you don't want them to be the thing that people focus on. You know, you don't want to be constantly fiddling with straps or hemlines or, you know, weird closures, and then everyone looks at that. And, you know, and that's a pretty open guideline, but it also, I think, is, you know, is effective, and it's not a bad place to start.
Rex, you look around the country. Is there a Chicago way when it comes to expectations and workplace dress that you would see as different from the coasts or north or south of you?
I definitely think every area has there's sort of regional differences, and I think Chicago is generally more dressed down than New York or L.A., or less, maybe less fashion conscious. I don't want to demean my entire area here, but I don't think they're
Well, it's not necessarily demeaning. People may decide
for
utility.
I don't think there's quite the focus on fashion necessarily here. But again, you see, depending on the business, I mean, if it's a big corporate office, you see a lot of guys still wearing suits and ties every day and that sort of thing. And if it's a more of a tech entity or it's Google's offices, you have people walking around in hoodies and T-shirts. So it's just wide variation. But I do think that it causes a lot of confusion. And I think – but I guess what the important thing that I think that's coming out of this, though, which is nice, is that there is more of a focus on what the individual is bringing to the workplace and less of a focus on what they're wearing. I think the point just made about not wanting whatever you're wearing to be a distraction is an excellent one. Because again, you want to be able to bring whatever it is you bring to the workforce, and the companies now are looking a lot more at, you know, the individual as opposed to looking at you as just a cog in this big machine. They're looking at what you bring, and hopefully that goes well beyond whatever garments you happen to be wearing that day.
And ties. I mean, Vanessa, you've written recently about this, and very humorously, President Obama often does not wear a tie. He didn't wear one to dinner with Princes William and Harry in London. They didn't either. He didn't wear one at his news conference about Justice Antonin Scalia's death in February. He didn't wear one for the opening dinner with President Xi Jinping of China. When the president drops the tie, does everybody else drop it too?
Well, if you look at the picture of that dinner with President Xi Jinping, no one was wearing a tie.
Yeah, right.
You know, which goes again to Christina's point about, you know, following the leader. You know, what he does, the rest of the White House does.
And not just here. You remind us when the new mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, swore his oath of office as mayor of London in the Southwark Cathedral. Navy suit, white shirt. No tie.
I mean, again, it's really about signaling to people looking at you, you know, who you are, what your value system is, you know, that you relate to them. And I think a lot of this is about generational shift and, you know, the current leadership wanting to relate to people who are their age, younger than them, not to be associated with the old, you know, authoritarian governing bodies. And so that that has led to the... not disappearance, but slackening of the tie.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what to wear now at work. Old conventions out the window. And there is freedom, yes. There's also some confusion sometimes about exactly what works. Yesterday, CNN Money's Donna Rosato posted a video on summer workwear mistakes. Even if you can get away with more casual dress, doesn't mean you always should, she said. She warned men away from sandals and too many open buttons on their shirts, and women away from showing too much skin.
Here are some no-nos when it comes to your work wardrobe. Flip-flops. These flimsy shoes, no matter how casual your office is, are not professional. A short skirt might feel cooler, when it's hot weather, but you don't want to look too hot when you're in the office. Make sure that your hemline is at least at or slightly above your knees.
Okay, there's CNN's version, but you may have your own. A clash over office attire over high heels specifically erupted in Britain this spring, drew attention even on this side of the pond. Here's Nicola Thorpe, temp worker, talking to the BBC. In May, she was sent home from her temp job at PricewaterhouseCoopers by her placement agency when she showed up to work in black flats.
As I was getting changed, she said to me, "You can't wear those shoes." And I said, "I don't know what's wrong with them. They're smart. They're black. In keeping with that code, they're just not a 2 to 4 inch heel." She said, "I'm sorry, all women who work here on reception have to wear heels."
She's got to have heels. Mark Zuckerberg, super billionaire head of Facebook, well, whatever he likes. Just back in 2014, he held a Q&A with the public. He was asked a lot of questions, Zuckerberg. One of them was about why he wears a hoodie and gray T-shirt every day. Here was his answer.
"I really want to clear my life to make it so that I have to make as few decisions as possible about anything except how to best serve this community. I feel like I'm not doing my job if I spend any of my energy on things that are silly or frivolous about my life."
We've got smart observers from right across the country. Rex Hupke at the Chicago Tribune, Christina Binkley from the Wall Street Journal in Los Angeles, Vanessa Friedman, fashion director at the New York Times, all with us. Amy in Appleton, Wisconsin. Amy, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just had a couple comments I wanted to make. I'm 41 years old, but I'm pretty old-fashioned in the sense that my mom always told me that look nice when you're out because you never know who you're going to run into. And when I was working before I was home with my kids, I always tended to dress nicely, not over the top, but I always wanted to look nice. And oftentimes, I was mistaken for the owner of the shop I was working in or as the boss. And I found other situations where, whether I'm helping out at my kid's school or even when I was at the American Embassy in Paris, I've been mistaken for an embassy official, a teacher, a principal. And I really am sad that our society has gotten so casual. I don't know if people realize that so much of what they wear and how they wear it in a certain setting, it's about their image, how they want people to see them. And if I'm at a school, I would like to know that the person I'm talking to is the principal. Because as your caller talked about in Portland, schools have become so casual. I mean, teachers are in.
Yeah, Amy, you're breaking up, but I think we've got the point. And let me take it to my crew here. Vanessa, is it sad that we're more casual now, or is it freedom?
You know, it's the way of the world, I think, is the answer. You know, dress codes change, and they have changed, you know, over centuries. I'm sure that Louis XVI would be horrified by what François Hollande wears.
maybe, or jealous, you know. I don't know.
Either way, you know, but, look at shoes. You know, men, high heels used to actually be the province of men.
Yes.
They were not, that was not a part of female dress.
Yeah.
So, you know, clothes change and the rules of clothes change and what, you know, how we perceive clothes change. So I don't think it's necessarily sad. I think it is what it is. And, you know, what's been interesting listening to the callers has been, you know, the two callers who have said they have gone into in a different direction. They're now dressing in a more formal way than they were, you know, perhaps a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's very possible the pendulum may swing back the other way. That is fashion.
Christina, let's get very granular for a minute. You've had a recent piece just in the last week talking what you call uniform dressing. What is that? And lead us into if you're tired of making these choices every day and you want to have a more consistent look so you're not standing in front of the wardrobe wondering what's the kind of formula, what are the elements of it? And be just as specific as you like, Christina, here about how you this you're talking for women here, but lay it out.
Yeah, and this can apply to men as well. They have all the same elements and actually probably easier access to them. But
okay. But
what uniform dressing would suggest is you think about having a 2-year wardrobe. So this would be a section of your closet devoted to work clothes that you would wear for 2 years, and you can go really, you know, uniform-like. I spoke to one woman who goes out and buys 14 blouses and 14 pairs of black pants and wears them day in and day out at work.
Are the blouses of different colors, or are they all black as well, or what?
In her case, they are all white blouses. She shops for them, goes into a store, chooses the one she wants, and negotiates with the manager for a volume discount.
And it's the same blouse, 14 of the same blouse, along with the same cut of trouser every day.
Yeah, it's interesting what's happened with her, by the way, is she's become known in her industry. Right now she works at Sony Music. She's a creative person. She's known in her industry for being the woman with the uniform. It's actually sort of promoted her image because she got it right, and that's a very key thing. There's no reason to be that drastic with it, of course. She could choose blouses in a variety of colors and even pants in a variety of colors or go with pants and skirts, but the essential thing is she thought about it in advance, she planned, she did her research, careful shopping. So there's a little there's time and money investing in this up front, figuring out, and she had to study what's right for her workplace. So it might be that one person wouldn't want to wear a white blouse and pants. They might think that they need something that's more conservative. I would suggest that anybody with almost in any office have at least one amazing, well-tailored, investment-worthy jacket that you can throw on if you need to sort of change the tenor of the conversation for a minute, if you have an important meeting or public presentation.
But in the case of her, with her, she had short sleeve white shirt, a little string tie, and black pants, all very nicely cut. There's a photograph here. It looks terrific. And she did that for 2 years, and then her big change was she went to long-sleeved white blouses instead
for
of short sleeve.
For the next 2 years. And she is now, she is 4 years into this, and she's going for her next change. She's thinking about going back and changing the sleeve lengths again. So,
Vanessa, what percentage of people do you think could go down that? I mean, it's very handy in that you never have to think about it. And if you pick something good, I guess you look good every day. Do most people have the, you know, can most people eat the same oatmeal for breakfast every day like that?
No. Short answer.
Okay.
But you know, it was funny. When Gordon Brown became Chancellor of the Exchequer in England, he was famous for, you know, doing the exact same thing, having a dark blue suit, white shirt and red tie, and he wore that every day. And, okay, he had more than one white shirt. But, you know, it was his uniform, and it was very specific, and people started to complain because they got bored of looking at him.
Mix it up, mister.
He had to go to a violet tie, you know, some blue. So, you know, I think most people need more change than that. But, you know, certainly within a range, I agree absolutely with Christina that, you know, it is easier to figure out what looks good on you, what works for you, what's easy to move in, and then stick with it.
What's good for men if they want to simplify here, Rex? Is there a way, or do you have to call it by every workplace and every industry? I don't know. Maybe once you cite that, can you have the equivalent of a uniform that's not the old-fashioned suit and tie?
Yeah, I think you probably can. I mean, Zuckerberg certainly is showing
one
side of
yes.
that. And I think I think my personal brand is sort of sentient laundry pile. So that that works for me. But I mean, it is always easier. It's always
easier. It's a very advanced laundry pile.
Yes, thank you. It's a lot easier for men, I think, again, to sort of, you know, find something. I think there's less variety in men's clothes, generally speaking. And so that helps on that front. But, you know, one of the things about this that I think is interesting, too, is that you look at personal – I was joking about my brand, but although some people would say I'm not joking.
Okay.
The branding is kind of central to so many of us now. I mean, everybody is kind of their own brand to a degree. So I think, as you were talking about with the woman who wears the white blouse and – every day. I mean, you know, people do kind of adapt a look and that becomes part of who they are. And I think then they, once they get that, they sort of tend to stick with it, whether it's for convenience or because it's sort of become part of their thing. And I think you see a lot more of that now where people, how they dress is sort of part, you know, it's, they're trying to also communicate something about themselves that they're trying to establish as you know, their own personal whether style or brand, whatever you want to call it.
Chris writes to us, I'm a business banker who hates the suit and tie look, all caps hates. It does not matter if I wear a suit or docker pants. I'm either writing a loan or selling a bank service. Who cares? Well, if it's true, who cares? Great. But Aaron says it's a young professional who looks very young. I tend to dress up for meetings and pitches to project authority, and everybody working it their own way. Matt in Owensboro, Kentucky. Matt, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. I was just calling to let you know that I agree. I believe it's who your clients are or who you're meeting with. I work at a rural housing authority outside of Owensboro here in Kentucky. And, you know, on a day-to-day basis, I wear khakis and a polo shirt tucked in, like I'm going golfing. And that works here. But if I go to a regional HUD meeting, I'll wear a button-up and some slacks or nice khakis or even, you know, a nice suit and a tie.
Right.
On the other point, I was going to say, as far as my uniform goes, I do. During the summertime, I've got nice chino shorts, khakis, polo shirts. It's my go-to. It's easy. It's quick. In the mornings, I've got three kiddos, so I'm out the door. In the wintertime, I'm in nice jeans, button-up shirt, nice jacket, I'm out the door, or cardigan.
Yeah.
You know, I think it depends on who you're dealing with, who your clients are. I sold real estate. You know, if I'm selling to a farmer, I'd look silly walking up to a barn, you know, in a suit, you know, especially in the middle of the summertime.
Yes.
If I'm dealing with a higher end client, then yeah, I'm going to dress it up. So I think it's common sense, and I agree with all your panelists. There is no uniform. I think it's individuality, but then again, there's a common sense aspect of it too.
Sure.
You know, you can dress down, dress casual, but still look professional, tucked in a shirt, nice brown belt, nice matching shoes,
yep.
You know, things of that nature. So I do agree, and I appreciate you taking my call.
I appreciate you calling, Matt. You got a pretty confident bead on it there. I have a sense that you know how to do it. I mean, common sense, situational, calling a lot of audibles here. But it is a lot of choices. It's a lot of decisions to make. Debbie, thank you for your call. Debbie in Saxton's River, Vermont. Debbie, you're on the air.
Hello. I went to our local bank here in Vermont the other day, and I'm still wondering why is it bothering me that the teller had a very revealing short sleeve top on and tattoos showing. And is it my age? I just felt like I should be giving my transaction and have dealing with business to a more professionally dressed person. And I know it's really nitpicking, but I just was amazed at this.
You know, Debbie, a lot of young people have a lot of tattoos. Was it the tattoo or was it the amount of flesh?
It was just maybe the revealing top, the whole look. It was just very unprofessional. And I looked down the line and maybe it was because it's a warm day and people were dressed that way. But I expect more from a professional banking institution, not to have a uniform, but to, you know, the code.
Yeah, well, there's something interesting. I appreciate your call a lot. Christina, what about it? There's Debbie, and she's wondering, am I wrong to feel this? Have I aged out of, or am I justified in feeling like I don't want to see that much of this person across the counter from me?
Yeah, well, that's a really key example. It brings in something Vanessa talked about a few minutes ago, which was not being distracting with what you're wearing. If she's remembering what the teller was wearing 2 days later,
yes,
that was really distracting. But more than that, one of the things that we see a lot, and this is happening in banks, and it's happening in schools, it's happening all over, is a lot of people are taking cues for what they're wearing, for what they're seeing in public images. So they're picking it up on Instagram, they're seeing it in movies and televisions. There's a lot of sex. And really what's coming down to that moment, I think, is the fact that the teller was wearing something that was very sexy in an institution where a client does not want to have that introduced. It's the wrong place. And we're seeing that it's back to that law firm in Washington, D.C., which wanted its female associates to tone down the sexy looks. And this is a judgment call that every particularly young woman has to make and has to learn about where you look for your cues in dressing. Television is probably not. And frankly, the fashion industry is not a good place to look for cues.
For office wear or work wear, necessarily.
Right.
Andrea writes to us here, I think some employers' bosses expect women to dress nicer, quote-unquote, than men. What do you say, Vanessa?
You know, I think that the gender issue is a huge problem when it comes to workwear, because even in places that have gender non-specific dress codes, which now legally most places have to have, implicitly they almost always really deal with female dress and often the question of whether women are dressing in too provocative a manner. You know, one of the things that's been fascinating to me is one of my children is in seventh grade, and her school's dress code, which is non-specific, says that straps have to be wider than 2 inches and hemlines cannot, and no short shorts. Now, realistically, very middle school boys wear very short shorts and spaghetti
strappy
tank tops.
Right.
Exactly. And she's very offended by this. So, you know, I think it does, dress codes do tend to land, you know, fairly or unfairly on women more than men.
What about it, Rex? Who carries? Is there a gender burden disparity with that comes with the freedom of the new work dress world?
Absolutely. And I was speaking with a couple friends about this last night, actually, and they said the same thing. They've been in instances where they have worn the equivalent of what a male employee was wearing, and they've been questioned about it. Dressing down today, I guess, whereas nobody said anything to the men. And that's just on casualness, not to even get into the what you were talking about in terms of lengths of skirts and stuff. So it's just it's very unfair, I think. And it's, I don't know exactly what the fix for that is, but that's been just an ongoing thing, even certainly prior to all of the loosening of dress code rules.
Well, it is a new day and we are well into it. And it's fascinating how even now people wrestling with exactly how to figure it out. It's been great to talk through it with all of you. Rex Hupke at the Chicago Tribune. His column is I Just Work Here. Rex, thank you very much for joining us today.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Vanessa Friedman, fashion director at the New York Times. Wonderful to have you, Vanessa. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you all.
And Christina Binkley in Los Angeles with the Wall Street Journal. Thank you, Christina.
It was my pleasure.
This is On Point.